Hello, hello. Welcome to At Home with the Intuitive Cook, the podcast giving a voice to everyday home cooks like you and me. Join me around the kitchen table as we chat about finding cooking ease and inspiration beyond rules and recipes and the noise of celebrity chef culture. It's not rocket science. It's just dinner. Tune in. Hello, Isabel. Welcome to the podcast. It's lovely to have you here.
Thank you, Katrina. Really looking forward to conversation.
A kitchen table conversation. That's my favorite conversations. And when I realized that is when this idea for the podcast came to me, to just have the kind of conversations, you know, you get when you sit around the kitchen table with friends. So you are French, but you've been living in Britain for a very long time. So I think I was really curious, as you know, both food cultures. Can you see the differences? Are they really as different as the cliché says?
They are. I think they really are. Although I think there's, in England, there's a sort of a thirst for developing cultures of food. There's an interest in other cultures of food, and there's an interest in French food. And it's a bit like, sometimes I feel like it's like a child who wants to learn from another place. Although there is a tradition, an English tradition of food, which I find quite lovely, which reminds me a bit of the sort of country type of food that you find in some place in France. It's not that different. I think what's different is some of the flavors and the way we gather around the meals. I think that's also a big difference.
Part of food culture, isn't this, the way
absolutely.
Of gathering? So how is that different, do you think?
I think, I mean, by my own sort of experience with food in France is that it's at the core of anything we do. Everything we do is around meals. And, you know, you start breakfast talking about what you're going to have for lunch. And at lunch, you start talking about what you're going to get for dinner. And then in all those meals, you will discuss what you're going to have in a week's time when people are coming for dinner, you know, and it's about the produce as well that you're going to get, which I think we have so much more choice in France in terms of the produce, the beautiful produce that we can get. And, you know, my family lives in Brittany, which is, you know, one of these places where you've got lots of beautiful produce, and they are by the sea as well, which means that they've got fresh fish, they've got fresh vegetables, they grow vegetables in the garden, but you can get all sorts of beautiful stuff. You know, you go to the supermarket there and you feel like you're in a very posh supermarket. You know, when you compare with England, you don't have that same choice. You know, it's weird. But when I go home, you know, and you go to the fish counter, for example, you've got mountains of spider crabs and live prawns. And I don't experience that here. And I live near Hastings, which is supposed to be a fisherman port. And sadly, I don't get the same quality of fish. You know, you've got little places where you can get some fish, but the boats come back, they have a little, it's like a little cabin, and they sell this fish there. And it's, even if it's completely fresh, it doesn't look the same. It doesn't appeal so much. I think it's because people don't eat the produce that's coming there. Does that make sense? It's just really weird.
It does make sense. I think in Britain, this kind of idea of going to the supermarket is much more, I don't know, maybe because when you go to a market, there isn't so many local markets. And I mean, I experienced that in Greece as well. You know, in Greece, every neighborhood in Athens will have a weekly market where local producers will come and sell their produce, and, you know, mountains and mountains of stuff. And it's just really a different approach. And even when I've been to farmers markets, you know, even in Islington in London, which is meant to be an amazing farmers market, you know, it's kind of disappointing. I mean, Borough Market is quite amazing, but Borough Market in London is more like, it's like a wholesaler's market. And so the amount of produce there is, you never get that anywhere on a neighborhood farmer market.
I think as well, if you go to Borough Market, you need to have a lot of money to get the stuff. It's very expensive. The French markets, like the Greek markets, it's not pennies because it's worth something, but you can get very good quality stuff for a fair price. You know, when I visit my friends in Paris, same thing. I've got a friend who lives in the smallest borough, rather, in Paris, and they've got this covered market, and it's just a way of life. Basically, you walk in, everybody knows each other. There's a little cafe, so people go and have a cafe, and then they chat with their neighbors, and then come out with lots of stuff, all the stuff they need for the meal of the day. You know, it's, you don't need to buy for the whole week. You will, you know, that this weekend you're going to make a pot with a farm chicken, and you're going to have some cheese, and you know where you're going to get your cheese, you know where you get your vegetables, and some vegetables you get it from this guy, but some other vegetables you get it from this other guy, because you know there's a difference between, you know, the salad from this person and the tomatoes from this other person. I don't know, it's just very exciting, you know. It's just a
It's an environment that makes food exciting, maybe because it takes food and produce seriously. So how was it growing up in that food culture? What kind of early memories of food and cooking and eating do you have?
I remember as a very small kid, my dream was to grow up and have a delicatessen, you know, behind the counters, and have access to all the pâtés and saucissons and sausages and pies. And I wanted that. I felt really excited by food. And I think my first memory of food is porridge. My grandmother gave me porridge when I was a very little kid, and I absolutely loved it. From there, I started having all sorts of different foods. So that was the first food I was kind of allowed to have as a very small kid, and then progressively they kind of introduced other things. And you know, the weirdest thing is I used to love tinned ravioli, but there would be a lot of cheese on top, and then it would be put in the oven, and now I would go, oh, I can't have that. But it's linked with going to my grandparents, so we would have that. And then the beautiful sort of food that I would have would be potatoes that would be sort of pureed but fried at the same time. So that's a speciality from the east of France, and it's so delicious. It's just cute potatoes. They're cooked in a big cast iron pot with lots of oil, and you eat that with a green salad with lots and lots of garlic and a piece of cheese. And the cheese will be either Comté or Appenzell or Gruyère. So, and that's just what you have: the potatoes, the salad with the garlic and the cheese, and maybe some soup. So it's like a vegetable soup with cream, and that's just absolutely delicious. So that's the first sort of weird memories, you know. It's just something that comes out of a tin, but which is immediately kind of jazzed up with cheese. And then the traditional meal that you have when you go to your grandparents. And then my grandmother, this grandmother, she was not a brilliant cook, but she cooked some dishes very well. And then my other grandmother would just be cooking fabulous dishes all the time. It was just absolutely wonderful. We would go to have a meal there, and it would be very sort of elaborate sort of dishes. She was the best at making crème chantilly. I've never had it like that after, ever in my life. It's just sad. I'm looking for the taste and I can't find it. I think it's also because of the produce she used at the time, which was different, and can't really find that. And then it was just everybody in the family was cooking. My uncle was a wonderful cook. He was, but that was more exotic. He would cook veal with banana and cream. And the first time I ever had smoked salmon was there, and it was something like a luxury. And it would make this beautiful table, and we'd have this very delicious food coming into our plates. And that was really, it felt really posh, but it was just, very delicious. The beautiful glasses. And there's something quite, how do you say that in English? Mise en scène, you have to show it off. And there is, it's like a ritual, you have the aperitif, then you have the starter, then you have the main, then you have a break, and then you have the cheese, and then you have the dessert, the pudding. I mean, still like that. When I go home, it's exactly that. You have the apéro. You can't start the meal without the apéro. And then by the time you finish, then you're not hungry anymore, but you've got to go through that whole meal. And it's just like a celebration all the time. I don't know, there's so many dishes, so many meals that I remember as a child. And I think interestingly, that dish that I was describing, the potatoes, and my grandmother used to do this, but her sister, who lived in the country, made the exact same meal, but because she lived in the country and she was growing her own vegetables, everything she made was twice or three or four or five times nicer because of the quality of the ingredients. Soup. When you're a kid, you don't like soup, supposedly, but we would absolutely devour the soup. When my great aunt made the soup, it was just the most delicious thing in the world. Can I have more? And the cream she used was just, she bought the cream from the farm. So immediately that's a different taste again.
Yeah, and I think when you experience that difference that the produce makes, you have to experience the difference it makes. Unless you experience it, you don't know. I mean, we get that, we run this little Whole Food shop here, and we get people who, they maybe come in for something else, and they decide to try just, the potatoes we have. Organic potatoes, even organic potatoes from a supermarket are probably, grown on a massive farm. So we get them almost directly from a much smaller farm. And then when people try these potatoes once, they come back just for the potatoes because they say, "Oh my God, they're just so much nicer. I can't buy the supermarket stuff anymore." So, in small ways, you can experience that everywhere. But of course, as you're describing your growing up in France, it sounds, oh my God, it sounds so delicious.
It is delicious. I mean, it's funny about this idea of potatoes. My grandfather used to grow potatoes, and there's a whole culture around potatoes around where my parents are, because he used to grow the potatoes, but it occupies quite a large space in his garden, and my dad would come and help him. So they would share the potatoes, and they don't taste the same. And I mean, potatoes are so important in our culture in France. You have to have potatoes almost with every meal. And it's just, I don't really find potatoes with that taste here. They don't taste so delicious. When I go home, we will have like simple poached fish with maybe a mayonnaise on the side, and just boiled potatoes, and you just smother them in fresh salted butter, and it's just super simple, but that's just one of the most delicious dish you can have, And there's a constant relationship with people around the food. It's not just in the family, it's also with the friends and the neighbors. The neighbor there is a retired fisherman, and he would just bring fish, fresh fish from the sea. So, he's got lots of mackerel, he brings the mackerel. It's just a way of life, you know. People share, people exchange, and same thing with fruits. You know, you got too many fruits, so you just share the fruits, or you make jam and then you share the jam. I mean, here sometimes I've got that with my neighbor. They're very lovely and they're quite elderly. You know, the gentleman is 90 years old, and he will give me produce from his garden. So I get peppers and tomatoes and beans and all sorts of things, and then I give him cakes. I make little cupcakes, so I'm the bun lady, you know.
Do you remember learning to cook, or did it just sort of all come through breathing in that air surrounded by this?
I think it's observation, lots of observation and helping out as well. But I think when I was little, it was mainly observing and looking and maybe doing little things, but not doing it all by myself. You know, I observe my grandmother, observe my mom. A lot of the stuff would be ritualized in a way, you know, with making things like special biscuits for Christmas. So the kids will, you know, we will be helping out for that, or you know, placing the apples on the apple tart. But it's just completely natural, I guess. You know, you look and you learn that way. But I remember my first cake, which was when I was 9 at my grandmother's with my little friend. We would make endless amount of yogurt cake, and that's the first cake you learn how to make because it's super easy. You just need your yogurt pot to measure every other ingredient. So one yogurt, and then 2 pots of sugar, 3 pots of flour, 1 little bag of raisin agent, and then a half a pot of oil, and butter your dish, put it in the oven, cook it for 35 minutes. And then when you get a bit advanced, then you start introducing chocolate. So you make marble yogurt cake, and then progressively you introduce other things, put little bits of apple, whatever, you know. It's delicious. I still do it to that day. I make all sorts of versions of it. So you can make it sweet, you can make it savory. We used to use it as a base to make a sort of fancy light Black Forest gâteau, which was not Black Forest gâteau, but you know, it was very exciting to do that as kids, you know.
And yeah, it's interesting what you mention now, that you then take that concept and turn it into lots of different versions, right? I think this is something that I see in myself, that I maybe learned something or ate something somewhere a long time ago, even. And now I'll think, oh, I can use that idea to do something similar or possibly completely different, but it starts with something. You know somehow, but you don't have to repeat the same thing. You think, oh, I could use this, as you say. Well, you know, it's a yogurt cake and it's like a sweet thing, but of course, why not make it savory, for example?
One of the things I really like about your ideas you share with people is that idea that you can do whatever you want. If you've got the basic skill, nothing stops you. The way I cook very often is I taste something that I really like, and I'm like, I'm sure I can reproduce that. And I'm not an extraordinary cook, you know. I'm not making very fancy or complicated things, but with the basic skill that I know very well, then I can do anything. You know, it's always based on something that you know, and you can explore, and you can just bring in new things all the time with the one thing that you know, which is the basic. And that cake, well, it's the basic, but it opens the door to all sorts of things. I can make waffle with the batter of this cake if I want. I can make, yeah, anything. And then I move on to another basic recipe that's going to help me with something else. It's like a stew. If you want to do a Mexican mole, it's very complicated. No, it's not. It's just once you've got the ingredients and you've got the process, then put it together. And then if you don't have one of the ingredients, it doesn't matter. Just something else that may have the same flavor profile, or it's completely different, because why not? What stops you? Nothing. There's not a big panel saying forbidden, you know. Some people are very, very precious about it. sancto sacred, you know, you can't touch that. And completely disagree. And I think to some extent, just when someone gives you, oh, so-and-so's recipe, you know, that's the best. No, it's not. It's common patrimony. Food doesn't belong to one person in particular. You know, there are people who are very good. They've got the skills and they will measure to the angstrom gram or whatever the recipes. But I think it's a bit of a fallacy and it's a bit pretentious.
I think cooking is like a tradition that's alive, just as, you know, folk music or whatever. So the more people cook or the more people play a song, the more there will be versions of it, personal versions. And I think this is why there is this saying, and I think this saying exists in many languages. I can never get it right in English, this idea that, you know, there are as many recipes as there are cooks.
Exactly.
You know, even if
yeah.
it's some sort of iconic traditional dish of, you know, a regional dish, say the potatoes you were describing, in every family, they will make it in their own way. And maybe you, as the daughter, learned how they did it in your family, but then you're doing it your way in your own version because now you live, you know, somewhere else and
absolutely,
you know, the context is different.
It's interesting, you know, my grandmother made a apple tart, which I will never eat again, you know, even though I know I remember what it looked like, because the pastry she made, the way she handled it was different. The way she cooked the apples was different. And my mom learned from her how to make this apple tart, and her tart is different. And my grandfather more or less refused to eat my mother's, even though it was very delicious. Or he would make comments, he would eat it, but he would say, oh, it's very nice. But there would always be a slight bitchy comment about the fact that it was not like his wife's. And then when I go home and my mom is a bit bored, she doesn't want to make the cake. And if I offer to make the apple tart, I can see my dad's face. He's not so happy. And I'm like, I'm not offended at all. But that's the way it is. And he himself is a very good cook, and he's the main cook now. He's always trying to reproduce what his mum was doing, because he's got that memory of those dishes and the taste of it. So he's constantly trying to reach that taste that he loved as a child. And I realize I do the same. You know, I will ask him again and again about recipes of special traditional dish, and that I will try to emulate it. And instead of being upset by it, I just think we embrace it, if that makes sense.
It's, you know, recipes or dishes, it just can't be rigid, because it's something that is alive, you know, in the same way as today's tomato is not the same as tomorrow's tomato. I mean, me eating something today, I'm not the same person tomorrow. So the whole experience
absolutely.
Is always different. So you can't kind of hold on to it. You can try to recreate it approximately as you remember it, of course. But and that is a nice thing to do. And now, my kitchen friends, it's time for a quick break to see what I've been cooking up for you. If you ever feel trapped by recipes or wish you could get more creative in your kitchen, I made a free mini course. It's called Ditch the Recipes, and it's a short series of 5 emails that will help you get started on your intuitive cooking journey. Sign up on the website at theintuitivecook.co.uk/free or find the link in the show notes. And now, let's get back to our conversation. These days, where you live, you are trying to teach other people to have this sort of creative approach to cooking as well.
I do different things, but one of the main thing I do is I call myself facilitator rather than the teacher, because I make clear to people when I with them that I'm not imposing anything. You know, I will give them a basic recipe, and that's a guideline, and then I make sure that they know that they can change things, and I encourage them to change things as well. And I work with a charity that offers complementary therapy for people with cancer or illness that are life-threatening. And this is a very therapeutic sort of session. And it's generally a very small group. And I try to recreate the idea of, you know, you're coming to a friend's house and you cook together, even if you cook different meals, and everybody will cook a version of that. And it's really humbling, because it is really powerful and people will totally embrace it. And it, sometimes the people who come to me are people who really love cooking, but they sort of gave up because their treatment has really sort of challenged their strength, so they couldn't do it anymore, or really has changed their taste, especially for people who are going through chemotherapy. It can be something that really affects your taste. And then they sort of progressively sort of reconnect with those things. So they're really encouraged to taste different things and then choose what they are going to do. So, for example, last Friday we had a session where we made a soup, a really kind of wholesome soup. And some of them went the sort of Italian way, or someone went more the French way, and someone went the Arabic way. So with all the spices and the different things we had, it was a similar sort of pot, but the smells coming from each pot was completely different. And people would sometimes put a little bit because that's enough for them, or went all the way and added lots of spices. And it's a way as well to reconnect with the taste, reconnect with the creativity as well, because it's creative. And the sort of curiosity, you can see people, they just suddenly sort of get really excited, and they can play. It's like all those herbs and spices and different oils or whatever, they become like colors that you would use to draw a beautiful picture. And it's very creative. I think it's meditative as well. I think it's like a journey that you have with taste. And they really love it. It also generates sort of storytelling, because people will talk about food. And some stories are just really beautiful. And I remember there was this elderly gentleman, he came and he was a bit suspicious to start with. He was like, well, I'm not too sure what's going to happen here. So he was sitting there. He was like, who's she, this woman who's pretending to teach me something about soup? He said to me, I make soup since I am five. When I was five, I was making soup. So, okay, yeah, right. Because my mom was very tired, and we all needed to help. And so I was making soup. And I actually went to the fields and I would steal the carrots and the potatoes because we didn't have money. And there was a whole story around that. And then he embraced it immediately, and he wanted to show what he knew. But he was the expert in soup. But he really wanted to reconnect with that, with the food. It was just a lovely year. Every time was just such a lovely, lovely time we shared, because there was all those stories that would come out.
Food is just so much connected with stories and memories and people and places. And yeah, well, this is all our conversation so far, isn't it? Yeah. We also have been exploring that. And I like how you described, you know, cooking with all the different flavors and spices as painting a picture, because yeah, that's also how I like describing, you know, when I try to help people understand how you build flavor. It is like a picture, like with a background and a main motif and then shadow and light, and it's just you playing with all these different layers. And you seem to be doing that in your sessions as well, when you can get people curious and people into this idea that you can play with that, then cooking suddenly becomes interesting and exciting and not boring and not something you try to avoid doing.
Yeah, it's not a chore anymore. For me, it's an outlet, you know, because I'm myself, 11 years ago, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. And I mean, I always loved cooking, and I would find all sorts of reason to cook all the time. You know, I was coming back from work. The first thing I did was drop my bag and I would go straight to the kitchen and I start cooking. That's just the way I clean the day, you know, if I had a rough day, cooking was my outlet. But when I was diagnosed and, you know, my world was completely upside down and I stopped working. I was a teacher in a secondary school in Camden and I stopped working because I couldn't face, you know, the treatment and going to a quite a difficult environment. And my days were written by the making of the meal, because I lived in Brixton at the time. I would go to the market, get some ingredients in the morning. Then I would go home and I would be very tired if I had had my treatment or, you know, whatever. And it was just a long day process. So the morning doing the shopping, then going home, resting, then preparing, then resting, and then cooking. And then I would start writing what I was doing, you know. And one of my friend had given me this beautiful little booklet saying, well, you can write whatever you want in it, you know, you're going through this. It could be somewhere where you can do your journaling or whatever. And very quickly it became a recipe book, because all I did would just be looking up recipes or writing up what I was doing. And that really helped me. And it was just bringing pleasure and joy in a quite a dark period of my life. And that helped me so much that, you know, when I came here, I met these people who were doing this, working for this charity. And from a patient, I became people think of me as a therapist. And I'm like, well, you know, just cooking with them. But it's incredible, the power of food. It really is. It's not just, you know, it's not about nutrition. There is an aspect of nutrition. And I make it very clear to people, I'm not a nutritionist. Of course, I'm interested in what the different foods are bringing into our body and what they help us with. But that's not the main idea around this space where we're meeting. It's about making sure you're bringing all these beautiful ingredients, which are full of vitamins and minerals or whatever. But it's also about the pleasure. It's about the joy. It's about the feeling that you get once you've eaten it. I don't know if you see what I mean by that.
Oh, yeah, I can see what you mean. And I also think it's quite powerful to know that you prepared this for yourself.
Yeah.
You know, the sort of pleasure and accomplishment we get from actually having prepared something ourselves. You can only get that feeling of satisfaction when you have made that effort. It doesn't have to be a lot of effort, you know, it can be just a simple soup, but just making that effort of putting it together for yourself to feed yourself is a completely different experience than just opening a can or a pot of, you know, ready-made soup. So back to your kitchen. What are you cooking today?
What am I cooking today? Oh, I'm going to make, I think it's, there's two possibilities. I've got some chicken. I was thinking of doing a sort of Greek-inspired chicken, actually, with oregano and yogurt, olive oil, marinating with a little bit of lemon and with some hummus maybe and tzatziki. That could be lunch, actually. It's probably going to be lunch. It's going to go in a wrap of some description. And I think tonight I'm going to make some Chinese sort of very simple noodle dish with chicken as well. I've got to eat that chicken. We've got to eat that chicken. So we could have chicken dinner. Yeah, so for that, actually, the chicken is marinating in a little bit of soy sauce, two different types of soy sauce, sesame oil, garlic and ginger, quite simple, a drizzle of honey as well, just to make it right, and a little bit of Chinese wine. So it's sort of marinating. And they say, oh, don't marinate it too long, but I don't care. I think it's nicer. I think it will just infuse the whole thing. That's going to be stir-fried with simple noodles and some spring onions, maybe. I've got a little bit of cabbage. I might just throw that in there as well. And a couple of sliced carrots.
Yeah, shredded cabbage is a good thing to throw into things. I like doing that. Well, I generally like throwing, you know, what needs to be used into various dishes. And I was just wondering, does it ever happen that you're too tired to cook or you don't have enough time to cook? What do you cook when you can't be bothered cooking?
What I tend to have is I always have a little bit of a jar, a big jar of with soup. So I make a big pot of soup and it's in the jar. So there's a number of things that are, I think it's a bit like the Japanese way where you've got a few ingredients and then you recompose and you throw things together and suddenly you've got a meal. And my partner his favorite meal is a leftover meal, he says. Oh, can we have leftovers tonight? Okay. Right. Okay. So there's always little boxes with maybe some cooked mushrooms. And so I recompose things. Don't know if you see what I mean by that. So it could be like suddenly I've got a salad. And that's the sort of French tradition meal in the evening as well. It would be a little bit of soup, a nice piece of bread and some cheese or some cured meat. Or you open a tin of sardines and you have it with some capers. So you've got all these little things in the fridge. My fridge is, when I open the fridge, everything seems to want to fall on me. It's quite crazy. It's, you know, when we were talking about having colors, you know, all my cupboards are filled with very exotic type of ingredients. And it's, to me, it's a bit like colors or like painting brushes or that sort of thing. And the fridge is all the elements of what I'm going to compose. And I've got lots and lots of, how do you say, condiments and sauces, weird things. That drives my partner nuts, actually. Can we empty the fridge? No, we can't empty the fridge. I need this. I need this sauce. I need this. I need that. Yeah, so I don't know if I answered your question, actually.
Yeah, well, I think you answered that when you can't be bothered to cook, you just use up all the bits you have.
Yeah, that's what we do. And but I love doing that. But I mean, it's true that sometimes I don't feel like doing anything. But sometimes my partner will cook. He does a very nice puttanesca, a lovely ragu. So I let him do this.
I don't know, we could just keep talking forever and forever, I think. It's just so, so delicious listening to you talk about all these memories and produce and flavors. But if you were going to give people two tips, what are your two favorite hacks, tips or shortcuts? How do you make things easier or faster or more delicious for you in the kitchen?
Two things I could share. Well, that's a tricky question. The one thing I do, it's to let things cook in their own juice before adding any fat. So, for example, I love mushrooms. And to me, the best way to cook mushrooms is to put them in the pan with nothing and just let them cook very slowly, maybe with a lid on top, and just let the juice come out and then dry off a little bit. And it concentrates the flavors. And then only then do I put the butter or the oil or the salt and pepper. And that's kind of, yeah, it concentrates the taste. So I don't know if that's a tip, but that's something I do.
Certainly a tip I want to try next time I cook mushrooms.
It really changes. And I had conversations with people like, yeah, but you know, mushrooms, they really absorb fat. So if you put the oil first and you put the mushrooms, then they will taste of the oil. But if you really want to concentrate the taste of the mushrooms, that's a good tip. To go back to porridge, I realized that to make a good porridge for me is to first cook it in water. And only after to add the milk. And when I do that, I feel the taste of the oats is more intense. So maybe it's in the same sort of line. It's try to get the real flavor of the food. And also when cooking something and you've been cooking each ingredient one after the other, is not to stir constantly. Because stirring is going to make a sort of mingling of the flavors. Whereas if you leave it to do its own thing, you can still have the different flavors of each ingredient stained, you know, intact, and then they will mingle in your mouth when you eat them. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. It also makes total sense, you know, with what we were talking about before and your love for the fresh produce. And so all your tips are focused on how can you make things taste more of themselves, which is lovely. So great. Well, thank you so much for this conversation, Isabel. That was great pleasure and so much deliciousness there in our kitchen chat. So thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Katerina. And I'm still looking at your post and everything. I think it's so interesting. I really thought the first time I read what you've written, it felt like I found a kindred spirit in that way. So thank you.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of At Home with the Intuitive Cook. Check out the show notes for links and tasty morsels. And remember, fresh episodes are served up every other Friday. Subscribe to stay tuned and keep exploring the joys of everyday cooking. Until next time, stay curious, trust your taste, and don't forget, it's not rocket science, it's just dinner.